Please call the April 26, 2010 board meeting to order. Roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville.
Here.
Ms. Nimmons.
Here.
Mr. O'Rourke.
Here.
Dr. Webb.
Here.
Mr. Welsh.
Here.
Mr. Wilbur.
Here.
Mr. Yost.
Have a motion, please, for executive session.
I move that the board convene an executive session to consider the employment of employees as permitted by Section 2C1 of the Open Meetings Act, collective negotiating matters as permitted by Section 2C2 of the Open Meetings Act, purchase or lease of real property as permitted by Section 2C5 of the Open Meetings Act, and pending probable or imminent litigation as permitted by Section 2C11 of the Open Meetings Act.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville.
Yes.
Ms. Nimmons.
Yes.
Dr. Webb.
Yes.
Mr. Welsh.
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur.
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke.
Yes.
Please call the April 26, 2010 meeting to order. Roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville.
Here.
Ms. Nimmons.
Here.
Mr. O'Rourke.
Here.
Dr. Webb.
Here.
Mr. Welsh.
Here.
Mr. Wilbur.
Here.
Mr. Yost.
Here.
Thank you. I wanted to mention to everyone that Mr. Yost is on with us on teleconference, and the technician gentlemen here have asked us to all speak close to the mic so that Don can hear us. So as you make any comments, please keep the mic close for Don to hear us. Thank you. Our first action item is approval of minutes. The chair will entertain a motion.
I move to approve the minutes.
Second.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville.
Yes.
Ms. Nimmons.
Yes.
Dr. Webb.
Yes.
Mr. Welsh.
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur.
Yes.
Mr. Yost.
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke.
Yes. Our next item is tenure recommendations. Dr. Lord, if you please.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke. Distributed to you by way of an addendum was the list of this year's faculty members being recommended to you for approval of the awarding of tenure. There are 20 faculty members' names. 19 of them followed the contractually prescribed evaluation process, which starts with a departmental personnel committee, then goes through the evaluation by the department chairperson, the college dean, the university personnel committee, and then finally to me and the president on its way to you. The one additional name here is a faculty member currently serving as a department chair, and he was evaluated in a similar process, but not according to the contract, but a process that mirrors the evaluation through those steps. And we proudly present those names for your consideration and be happy to answer any questions.
Chair will entertain a motion.
I'll make that motion to the tenure recommendations to accept them.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. Hearing no discussion, roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville.
Yes.
Ms. Nimmons.
Yes.
Dr. Webb.
Yes.
Mr. Welsh.
Yes.
Mr. Yost.
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke.
Yes. Our next item is tuition and fee rates for 2011. Dr. Perry, please.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke. I would like to introduce Dan Nadler to present the tuition and fee proposals.
And we will take tuition as one motion and fees as a second motion?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President, Mr. Chairman. You have coming in front of you an addendum for recommendations on tuition rate and student fee increases for the 2010-2011 academic year. I just wanted to highlight a couple numbers for you. First and foremost, we're pleased to be bringing forward to you the lowest recommended increase that we've had on the table since we've had the guaranteed tuition rate. So we're very pleased about that. Certainly the institution has worked very, very hard in continuing to make Eastern Illinois University an affordable place to study, learn, and earn a degree. And these rates reflect that philosophy and that goal. For our continuing non-guaranteed students, we are recommending that rate actually will go to $197. And then for our new students, fall 2010, the rate will go up to $254. Last year's rate was $239. That's for in-state resident students. For our undergraduate non-resident students, the proposal is a $762 per credit hour rate for the fall 2010 semester. On your next page, you have the graduate rates. So for Illinois residents, similar to the undergrads, from $239 to $254 per credit hour. Our graduate student rate, we're proposing $686 per credit hour for non-residents. This represents actually a $31 per credit hour decrease. This is as a result of the change in the multiplier from 3.0 to 2.7 for the graduate students. Again, we're very pleased to be bringing forward to you the lowest rates that we have been that have been recommended since we have implemented the guaranteed tuition rate plan. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Can we have a motion, please?
I'll move.
Second.
Second.
Discussion.
Well, tuition increases, unfortunately, at this time are necessary with the state of the state and the state of the economy. But I am pleased that this is one of the lowest increases that we've had in the last several years. And I think that we are keeping Eastern as a very affordable institution, even with this increase. And so I'm in full support of it.
Any other discussion?
Did I read someplace where there's an effort to extend that tuition guarantee to graduate students?
There is some discussion right now to extend it 6 years for undergraduate students. I don't know of any movement on the graduate student level.
I guess that's what I read, yeah.
Yes.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Ms. Nimmons?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur?
Yes.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
And Mr. O'Rourke?
Yes.
For student fees on your next page, we have a series of different mandatory student fees at the institution. Like last year, certainly there's been a great deal of sensitivity to keep Eastern Illinois University affordable and to keep costs down as best as possible. There are only two primary priorities this year, this upcoming year, for the student fee increase area. The first of which is a priority that's been on the table for many, many years, and that is to really actively and aggressively deal with the $16 million worth of deferred maintenance in our physical sciences areas. There is a proposal on the table in front of you for the campus improvement fee to increase from $12 to $14.50 for next year. That would be a $2.50 increase. And then subsequent increases of $2.50 for fiscal year 12, 13, 14. This would, one, allow us an opportunity to have some real-time renovations of labs and classrooms and make a significant difference, and two, equally important, to begin generating some revenue to help pay for a portion of a new College of Science facility. That is the first student fee that's in front of you. The second one is the Lance O'Brien operations account, which is part of the revenue bond area. We have several millions of dollars of deferred maintenance over in that area as well. Presently, students are paying $1.85 per credit hour. The recommendation is to increase that by 65 cents per credit hour, bringing that up to $2.50 per credit hour. Additional increases for FY 12, 13, 14 would be 50 cents per year per credit hour increase. The reason we're doing this is really twofold. The last time this account had an increase in the fee was back in 2005. Presently, students are paying $22.15 for a full-time equivalent course load. That money today is worth about $15.51. So just by escalation of cost of building materials, maintenance, those kinds of things, we really needed to look at increasing this account to restore the buying power so that we can continue to do some things. Secondly, and equally important, is the fact that Lance dates back to 1966, and we still have some original roofs and plumbing and electrical issues that really each and every year need to be dealt with. By generating some additional revenue in this area, we can restore the buying power of the account, and secondly, we can begin to generate some revenue to deal with some capital renewal and capital improvement. I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have at this time.
Chair will entertain a motion.
I move to accept the student fee increases for the next few years.
Second.
Any discussion?
Dr. Nadler, with the tuition increase that the board just approved and these fee increases, what will be the tuition for a full-time entering freshman student next year?
I do not have that figure right in front of me at this time. We certainly can compute that.
Well, right now the full-time is 7170, and it would be 30 semester credit hours, where the proposed increase of $15 a semester credit hour would add 450.
Correct.
And so that ends up being 70. Say it again, Bill.
7620.
$7,620 would be the tuition for a student taking 30 semester credit hours.
Okay. That includes the lab fees?
No, if you include the fees with these fee increases, right, as a point of reference, this year for students registering full-time, tuition and mandatory fees comes out to be something like $9,528. With these increases, we'll be up just under $10,000 for tuition and mandatory fees for a student taking 30 semester credit hours.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that this was brought before, both of these increases were brought before the Student Senate, and the campus improvement fee passed the Student Senate by a 23-3-1 vote. And I think that was largely because we decided that it was imperative that we take our own university into our own hands. We're still waiting for capital money for Doudna that was completed several years ago. And so we cannot rely on the state for a new science building. And so I think several of us took tours of the current science facilities, and needless to say, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Ceilings that are leaking, lab equipment that needs to be replaced. And so I think that all of us recognize the fact that we needed this fee increase to make sure that we could continue to be a leader in the sciences and to recruit new talented students and faculty members to help with our goals. And so while this is a large fee increase, I think it's definitely needed. And I think it's basically the same with the Lance bond revenue fee. That passed the Student Senate by 24-3-1 vote. So I think there's a general realization that the state's not going to come through, so really the only other way to get money is through the students. And I think that we recognize that and support that. We already supported the new textbook rental facility, which we all had lunch in today. So we've seen the fruits of that, and I think that we can continue to move our campus forward even without state appropriations. And I think that's largely due to the creativity and the foresight of the administration. So I applaud them, and I think we're ready to get on board with this and make sure that our campus continues to improve even if the state's not giving us money.
I was wondering, Mr. Chairman, how this compares, the $10,000, to the other state universities in Illinois.
Well, Dr. Webb, right now our tuition is fourth from the bottom among 12 public campuses in Illinois. I do not know what other universities are going to do with regard to their tuition increases for the coming year. I suspect that when all the dust clears, we'll still be third or fourth from the bottom in terms of tuition rates. Our fee increases are modest as well, so I don't think we're going to change much in terms of our positioning with regard to the other universities in Illinois.
Thank you.
I wanted to add one thing, too. In the Student Senate meeting, essentially upon the first reading of the proposed fee increase for the campus improvement fee, the question was asked whether there were going to be other funds sought for a science building, and I said yes. We're going to try to raise funds in our capital campaign, and we're also going to be looking at other sources at the federal level. We also have currently in our in the proposed budget, capital budget from IBHE to the state, $12 million for planning for a science facility. I have a goal of raising at least another $20 to $30 million from other sources. So the students have put a stake in the ground by endorsing this fee very strongly, and we're going to use that kind of student enthusiasm for this project to generate enthusiasm among other sectors for the support of this.
Any other discussion or questions regarding the fee presentation? You know, I should speak in the mic better, as I asked everybody else to. Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Ms. Nimmons?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur?
Yes.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke?
Yes. Our next item is personnel contracts. President Perry, please.
Yes, I'd like to ask Dr. Dan Nadler to make a presentation with regard to personnel contract of Barbara Burke, athletic director.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. President. I'm very pleased to offer for your consideration the possibility of giving our president authorization to offer a multi-year contract to Barbara Burke. This would be in the form of an extension. Barbara joined us nearly 2 years ago at a real critical time in the history of the Department of Athletics. Since her arrival, she has interjected a great deal of energy, hard work, and hard efforts in the athletic department as well as Eastern Illinois University. Certainly, she talks about there being many sport programs over in the department, but she also always talks about there being one team. And that one team is athletics, that one team is Eastern Illinois University. Our programs have become increasingly competitive academically. We do extremely well. All of our programs are achieving academic success, and it's an area that we can be very proud of. The competition on the floor, on the court, in the fields, it's another area that we can definitely be very proud of. We have a number of conference championships, postseason play. Each and every year, we feel that we put our best student athletes forward and have the ability to win as many games as possible while doing so the right way. The right way in the classroom, the right way in the various arenas in which we compete. We're really proud of what Barbara has done. Certainly, she's brought a sense of vision to athletics within the context of Eastern Illinois University and its mission and its goals. And she also has worked extremely hard in doing networking, in building relationships throughout the university, as well as out in the communities. Certainly, we're beginning to see an increase in fundraising activities, which is extremely helpful to the Department of Athletics. It also is very important to Eastern Illinois University overall. One small example is the recent spring fling that took place. The overall goal was to raise $50,000, and they were able to raise over $77,000 just for that one event. So certainly we're seeing the progress taking place, allowing this contract extension for an additional 2 years will help us continue down the path of success. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the board may have at this time.
I make a motion to authorize this extension.
Second.
Second.
Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
I'd just like to say that, you know, we're very fortunate to have Barbara Burke. She's a touch class. Another example was the gala that was held in Effingham. There is an urgency on behalf of our community to become a part of Barbara's leadership, and it's contagious. And I just wholeheartedly support this. We're very fortunate to have her.
Any other discussion?
I'd just like to say that from my observation of the community, she has excellent community support. The community recognizes her leadership abilities, and more importantly, I think the integrity to the program that she has brought to bear on.
I would just like to say that Barbara has done an outstanding job at intercollegiate athletics, and I'm in full support of extending her contract and continue that. The gala, as Mr. Yost mentioned, was one of the most amazing events I've been to here at Eastern, and I think that really speaks to the direction that she wants to move forward with Eastern. And with this new athletics master plan, I think we will achieve that, and I think that's due mainly just to her vision. And so I fully support her continuing in this role and fully support what she's been doing.
Any other discussion or comments? Roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Ms. Nimmons?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur?
Yes.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke?
Yes. Our next item is the Board of Trustees 2011 meeting calendar. Dr. Perry, please.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke. We recommend that the Board of Trustees approve the calendar that's in your board book for 2011, which has meetings on Friday, January 21st at 2011. These are all meetings on campus, by the way. Friday, March 11th, 2011. Monday, April 25th, 2011. Monday, June 20th, 2011. Friday, September 2nd, 2011. Friday, November 18th, 2011.
Chairman, entertain a motion.
I move to accept these dates.
Second.
Second.
Someone? Thank you. Any discussion?
Yes. I have a question. Is there anything specifically required for the January 21 date? Any timelines that have to be met? Could this be changed to the week before?
Week before would be January 14th. In terms of the academic calendar, is there anything, Dare Blair, that would?
Not off the top of my head. I'll try to check here real quickly.
Okay.
I don't believe there's any problem.
I don't think there's any, there's no specific requirements other than our annual meeting, correct? That's on that Monday.
Right.
Have any of these dates, particularly in the fall, been picked to go along with activities that are maybe going on that weekend, like a football game or athletic hall of fame? I'm not saying that's the priority should be. It isn't, but that would be nice if it was. I don't know if it is. I haven't looked at.
Well, they aren't. Homecoming and parents' weekends are neither of these weekends.
Well, that would be good. I mean, because there's a lot of the other things
right.
to be going.
So we've tried to avoid those heavy use weekends. I'm not quite sure on the 18th whether there's a home football game. That the playoff picture is changing in FCS, and I'm not sure it's totally known yet.
No, it's not.
So of course, if you we can adopt January 14th at this point, if the board would like that. Of course, all of these dates could be changed later with adequate notice.
Or you could decide it at another time if you want to look at different dates.
Could we table it until the June meeting?
Sure.
Right.
One other question that I had is, why exactly do we have meetings on the Friday before breaks? For instance, the March 11th would be the Friday before spring break, and November 18th would be the Friday before Thanksgiving break. Is there any particular reason for that? Or
I'll have to consult the university archivist.
To keep the student representative on campus, I think.
It's done his job, that's for sure.
But if it's tabled at this point?
Yeah. Take a voice vote on that, or just in favor? All in favor of tabling? say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it. Thank you.
We'll come back in June after the board's had some opportunity to discuss it.
Our next item is the annual meeting election of officers. Mr. Ingram?
As you all know, the April meeting is the annual meeting. That's when we conduct the election of officers. And pursuant to the statute, we will have the chairperson and the secretary election done by secret ballot, and she's passing out those ballots right now. And Mr. Yost, I will come take your vote privately as this goes on, okay?
Sure.
All right, the first position is chairperson, and I will ask, are there any nominations for chairperson?
I'd like to nominate Leo Welch.
Are there any other nominations? Hearing none, nominations are closed, and you can vote while I go over and listen to Mr. Yost. Okay, the chairperson elected is Leo Welch. Okay, the next secret ballot, are there any nominations for secretary?
I would nominate Roger Cradiville.
Are there any other nominations? Hearing none, nominations are closed, and vote on that second half sheet that you have. The secretary elected is Roger Cradiville. Okay, the next two will be by open ballot. Are there any nominations for vice chairperson?
I'd like to nominate Dr. Webb for vice chairman.
Are there any other nominations? Do you do a roll call vote?
Mr. Cradiville?
Yes.
Ms. Nimmons?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Abstain.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur?
Yes.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke?
Yes.
Congratulations. Okay, the last position, are there any nominations for Member Pro Tem?
I nominate Bill O'Rourke for the position of Member Pro Tem.
Are there any other nominations? Roll call.
Mr. Cradiville?
Yes.
Ms. Nimmons?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur?
Yes.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke?
I'll abstain, too.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Ingram.
Yes.
Our next item is a labor agreement. Mr. Miller?
Mr. Chairman, the board is asked to approve a labor agreement that is required by statute. The university is required to enter into this agreement, which has to do with the transfer of pension and welfare payments regarding temporary employees at the university. The agreement is included in your materials.
Do I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion. Hearing no discussion, roll call, please.
Mr. Prattville?
Yes.
Ms. Nimmons?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur?
Yes.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke?
Yes. Our next item is revisions to board bylaws, governing policies and regulations. First reading. Mr. Welsh, do you want to address this at all?
Okay, this is under employee benefits, board regulations 2B7B3 and 2B7D5A. On your board packet, the changes to the current regulations are essentially lined or not in red. The impact of the first change in regulation would state as follows: employees whose appointment is supported at least 50% by grant or contract funds shall not receive any benefit for unused sick leave at the end of the fiscal year or end of the appointment, whichever is earlier. The second change is under vacation time, termination of employment. And the change reads as follows: vacation time earned by an employee with while employed in a position supported by at least 50% by grant or contract funds is not compensatable upon termination of employment. Under administrative employees, governing policy 2C2, the change is that the board may offer employment contract to specific senior administrator employees and coaches, provided that such contracts may not exceed 3 years in length. The change unless a longer term is required by law. This is the first reading of these changes in the regulations. They will be submitted to the university community for comment or review. The expectation, it will be acted upon by the board at the June meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Welch. That concludes our action items. Next, we'll go to information items, the President's report.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke. I would like to introduce Dr. Dan Nadler, who will introduce Rachel Fisher, who will discuss our Center for Student Community Service proposal. You may recall at our last meeting, we had presentations on other centers that were part of our campaign for Eastern plans. Ms. Fisher was not able to be here at that meeting, so she's here to make the presentation today. So, Dan, you'd like to give a couple of introductory remarks?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're very pleased today to have with us Rachel Fisher, who is the director of our Student Community Service area. You know, about a year and a half ago, when the President rolled out his overall priorities for the institution, one of those priorities was to enhance student leadership and community service opportunities. And we have some very, very ambitious goals for this area, and I'm very pleased to let you know that we've had some incredible progress in this area as well, much of which is attributed to Rachel Fisher, who has really immersed herself into the entire university community, as well as the Charleston, Mattoon, and surrounding areas. She's doing an incredible job for us today, and we thought it would be nice for the board to have an update on these initiatives. Rachel?
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here to give you an update on where we stand with volunteerism, the Student Community Service Office, and really also share with you where we're going. So with that, I'd like to direct your attention to our theme, If Not Me, Then Who? Our goal with volunteerism is certainly one to engage large groups and classes and a lot of different organizations, but we also want it to truly be a call from within, an individual call. If our goal here is to create an active citizenry, then we must have the call from within to make a difference. So I will ask you and challenge you, if not me, then who? Who is going to make the difference and volunteer? So with that, I do want to share with you a few numbers on where we are. Currently, we have over 1,500 students actively participating on an email blast that goes out weekly that informs them about upcoming special events that are happening. For those of you that are in marketing and sales, what's wonderful about these 1,500 is these are not cold calls. These are students that have expressly said, I want to be on this list, I want to learn more about and gain involved. And I would dare say our reach is actually stronger than the 1,500 because some of the people on the list are actually the community service chairs for different organizations. So they take that information, take it back to the organization, and the organization reports back in. So we're very happy with where that's heading. Additionally, our office goal is not only to enhance what's currently happening, but also create our own unique service projects based on the needs of the community and our passion of our students. And certainly, we've been quite active. In the fall semester, we had over 90 events. This semester, we've had over 75. And actually, one was this past weekend, the 8th Annual Panther Service Day. For those of you that recall, that is a wonderful day of service. This day, we actually engaged an evening service program as well. So truly, it was a full day of service opportunities. Last year, we had about 175 students participate. This year, we had over 300. That kind of growth is exciting. Additionally, we continue to work with a variety of agencies in Charleston and Mattoon. We currently work with over 40 different agencies, and this runs from the national organizations like American Red Cross or Habitat for Humanity, but also organizations that we might deem the mom and pop. There's a local soup kitchen here that was started by three women that said someone should be able to have a free meal in this community if they need it. Well, we're very thrilled to be assisting them as well on their project. Additionally, last academic year when it closed, we saw that we had over 52,000 hours of service and over 4,800 students engaged in service. That wide impact and that variety of service, we can see we're continuing as this last semester alone, we've increased 8,000 hours and 2,000 students. So it's very exciting to see as we wrap up the semester where we'll be for this academic year. A quick history, which I know we've kind of been briefed on here. In January of 2008, the presidential priority was named. In the fall of 2008, service began. A year later, we introduced Jumpstart to Give. It was a wonderful opportunity for new students the Saturday before classes began to participate in volunteerism and service in the community. Additionally, in the spring, we housed again the second annual MLK Junior Day of Service, which is a national day, and it's a lovely way that therefore every semester we're starting off with service in our community. Since last April, when I had the pleasure to speak with you, a couple things I particularly want to highlight for you is our office created a network of other volunteer offices at all the universities and colleges here in the state. That has allowed us the potential to not only share best practices, but also brainstorm the potential of down the road, perhaps two universities coming together to one site to work together. So it's been a nice piece to discover. Certainly, as you saw our numbers, a lot of different service projects enhancing what we're currently doing, working with a wide variety of student groups, some that are looking for one-time service, others that are looking for routine every month or maybe even every week to participate. We additionally work with a number of faculty and courses to help them enrich the service component. A few of our partnerships that stand out I'd like to briefly mention to you. When we meet with our community partners, the question I always start off with is, what is your ideal community? And if you think about that for a moment, I would challenge that every member of the board would probably have a different answer, and that's good. But our goal is that every community is going to have challenges. There's no way to avoid that. But how we overcome them is what makes us ideal. And certainly these organizations and others, they have a particular focus in mind. American Red Cross, for example, said, well, for us, it's three things. People know CPR, people know first aid, and people know survival swimming, particularly here in the area with the potential of floods. So in our office, we have a giant board, and we write that up there, and that becomes one of our goals we look at as we look at the needs of the community and match that with the passion of our students. Additionally, Special Olympics, certainly university has been, had a strong partnership for numbers of years with Special Olympics. We've seen that expand into a program called Young Athletes. It's only about 4 or 5 states in the country have been chosen to roll out this program for 2-year to 7-year-old kids, kind of preparing them for Special Olympics. This spring, we're very excited to be the official partner here with Area 9 for that. So our student volunteers not only helped over a 10-week process after school, they also got to take leadership and actually plan some of the educational pieces additionally. We certainly have our 3 all-campus days of service, which we've kind of touched on briefly. This year, the Department of Human Services and the Governor's Office of the State of Illinois announced that this would be the year of the engaged senior, trying to get seniors to become active and volunteer in their community. For us here, that's a fantastic opportunity for intergenerational volunteering and something that we feel very strongly about that benefits everyone. So we're very excited to be the first university partner to step up in the state and say, we want to make this an official part of our calendar year. And certainly we've been doing that. Additionally, we partner also on the state levels, like the Year of the Engaged Older Adult, but also the CACI, which is the Children Advocacy Centers of Illinois. So we're not only helping locally, but we're also stretching that out as far as our need can reach. So, with all this in mind, where are we going next? Well, there's a few things. We're looking locally at Adopt-a-Block program with different student groups sign up for twice a month to go out and do community beautification in the surrounding areas. But additionally, while they're out there, they're going to be meeting the residents and talking to them. And I have no doubt we're going to sever some additional needs, even things from leaf raking to shoveling snow, but maybe some larger pieces as well. And it gives us a nice opportunity to connect with our community. Additionally, we have this great mass of volunteers that like to come out for those one-day service blitzes. They like to give a couple hours, and then that feels good. But we also have students that really want to take a leadership role. They really want to own this experience and really specialize in a particular area. So with that, we've created some service teams, such as SWAT, which is a Senior Wellness Action Team. So they are very good at calling bingo at the nursing homes. Additionally, we have Billy's Buddies. That's for people that like working with pre-K to 8th grade students and playing a variety of things, from whether it's a readathon to just doing some mentoring with the kids. In the fall, we'll also roll out a service team for conservation. We just haven't thought of a really cute name yet, so I don't have that one. We additionally are looking at new partnerships and continuing to work with the City of Charleston to discuss what are some long-term pieces that we really can engage in with them. And part of the excitement here is that we're educating people about the potential of EIU students and realizing that there's a wide variety between a high school student volunteer and an EIU college volunteer. These are professionals that are getting trained in their area, and they have a great deal of passion and leadership. And it's wonderful to engage with community partners that will call me and say, I didn't realize they could do that. Well, yes, they can do a lot. So we're very excited to keep seeing that happen. In the fall, we host a volunteer fair, and we're looking at doing something in the spring to engage faculty, staff, and community members in volunteerism as well. Certainly a great deal of our faculty and staff advise our students, so this is a lovely way for them to connect with some of the service opportunities in the area. So, of course, I'm a fan of photos, so I want to share with you a few we've been. This is from last year's Panther Service Day. We also, this is from Jumpstart to Give, which engaged over 1,200 students on the Saturday before school began. So if you can imagine the library quad, these pictures don't do justice for how wonderfully overwhelming that was. We also have MLK Junior Day of Service, which happened in January. What's wonderful here is there was snow on the ground, and it was a day off, and 200 students said, I want to make a difference. That's incredible. A few things our volunteers have said in service surveys we fill out. I'm a debut leader and our team did it together. It was a wonderful experience that I'm glad we're able to share. Wonderful day. If you'll see the lovely young man at the very bottom there, he was king of the nursing home and the ladies enjoyed being in his court for the day. We also have, we really enjoyed the day and it's great to know that what we did helped others. I liked that we were helping others. I think it shows people that you care when you're giving the time that you have for yourself to help them. And this here is a picture from our Young Athletes program with some of our volunteers. I got to really see my major in action today. Great fun. I'm looking forward to next week. That in many ways is the spirit of our volunteers. It's not about just now, but it's also about what's going to happen tomorrow and after that as well. Additionally, as we work with the community, we always appreciate the feedback from them. And this, in particular, deals with the Year of the Engaged Older Adult. Eastern is a great model because they have a president very committed to service, a lifelong learning program, a great gerontology program with gerontology students who serve as part of their studies, a fantastic range of student volunteer activities. I hope we can highlight Eastern Illinois University as the model of intergenerational service learning. And to date, we're one of the few universities in the state that has really stepped up and owned what this year will look like and really have started to implement some intergenerational ideas. So we're very thankful to be a part of that partnership. And finally, I want to leave with the idea that if we went around the table now and asked, what does volunteering look like to you? What does service mean? Everyone would have a very different answer for that, and that is wonderful. And additionally with this, we do a food drive in the November, December time, and a young man wrote to me and said, who knew collecting cans could be this rewarding? It's awesome to think about where the food will be going and how many will be helped. What he did was pick up those boxes, bring them back to the union, and we shipped them to the food pantry. So the idea that service doesn't always have to be with the little kids or out calling bingo, but sometimes we just want to do something that we know helps. And if collecting cans works for this young man, how wonderful. So I leave you with, to truly make the difference and volunteer, you must stand up and make a choice. Our students are choosing to be involved. It is a pleasure to help them make that connection. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that great report. Does anyone have any questions or comments?
I take it from what you said, Rachel, that very few college universities have a position similar to yours.
There are a few, yes, but it's still very much a new opportunity. I think a lot of offices, it's pulled into its other duties.
Put me down for the leaf-raking volunteer.
Perfect. Thank you. Got our first one.
I would just like to say that I volunteered at Panther Service Day on Saturday, and that was an amazing experience. To have 300 students there, all working together to make a difference in our community. I walked around town with Mayor Inyart and picked up trash. And sometimes that's all you need to do. And last year, President Perry was an expert sweeper at, I think, Habitat for Humanity, was that? So it's a great way to engage everyone and get And I would like to say hats off to Rachel Fisher. She has been a tremendous asset to our university and to this entire initiative. She is really the Energizer Bunny.
Thank you.
All of these, I think every single committee on student government has worked with her in some way, shape, or form on some sort of project that they've had. And I think that just speaks volumes to her energy and all of her ideas that she brings to the table. She is truly an asset, and I would just like to say thank you to President Perry for having this office and having this priority for the students, because I think giving back to the community is the only way we're going to enhance those ties that, you know, between the town and gown relationship, that might not always be the best relationship to have. So I think making sure that we continue to strengthen those ties and make sure that we are out there, I think that's the best thing we can do. So thank you.
Any other comments?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would just mention that you probably noticed in the presentation there were many connections with the academic side, and this is in line with long-term our integrative learning initiative. The connecting of service with how these students reflect upon their experiences here and what they're going to do with their lives after they graduate. So we're going to continue to build those relationships, and in the long term, I think that's going to provide opportunities for friends of the university to support these efforts as well.
Thank you, Ms. Fisher. Very good. Thank you. The next item is a report from the chair.
I've got one more.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's so sorry. Mr. O'Rourke, thank you. I had one more presentation to make on energy conservation measures, and I'd like to ask Vice President Weber to introduce this presentation.
Hey, thank you very much, Mr. President. It's my pleasure to introduce to the board Mr. Gary Reed, who is EIU's Director of Facilities Planning and Management. Mr. Reed has been long at the forefront of the green movement here on campus. Thanks to his vision and leadership, in the past we have done a lot of work in cutting our utility usage here on campus. And as the board saw this afternoon at our new textbook rental facility, that is also a very green facility. Joining Mr. Reed today, we have Mr. Dave Evers from Honeywell. We're quite pleased with the partnership between EIU and Honeywell. And part of that partnership going forward is not just a renewable energy center that you see sprouting out of the ground over on 18th Street, but a series of many energy conservation measures that Mr. Reed and Mr. Evers are going to introduce to you today.
Thank you, Dr. Weber. I appreciate this opportunity to review the CESCO Energy Improvement Project with the board. I feel that the history in this project will confirm this to be one of the most innovative and aggressive projects that Eastern Illinois University will ever undertake. Rising from the need to sustain a highly reliable mission-critical steam supply, which, by the way, is the energy source that provides building heating and cooling, food preparation, hot water generation, and other services, replacement of our ailing and obsolete coal-fired central plant was vital if we were to continue a sustainable campus operation. However, as we painfully came to realize, appropriated capital funding to accomplish a project of this magnitude was not forthcoming. To address the need for replacement of this crucial infrastructure, a solution was found through energy performance contracting. This project development option is made available to the Illinois universities through legislation associated with the Public University Energy Conservation Act. And as the direct result of significant efforts from the EIU administration, the Board of Trustees, the EIU student body, Representative Chapin Rose, Senator Dale Ryder, and others, an energy improvement partnership with Honeywell International was developed. Within the framework of this partnership, a total of 23 energy conservation measures will be accomplished, including the construction of a replacement for the obsolete steam plant. In June of 2009, just 10 short months ago, this project was brought before the board and was approved to go forward. Ground was broken in November of 2009, and construction of the new Renewable Energy Center began. Once completed, the Renewable Energy Center will supply the entire thermal needs for campus. Plus, we'll generate a portion of the campus electrical needs through a combination of steam-based cogeneration and a solar array. This facility is the first of its kind in Illinois, and will be fueled with wood chips and eventually other competitive biomass fuel as they become available in the market. In addition to this unique campus utility mission, the Renewable Energy Center will provide significant research and educational opportunities for EIU faculty and students in the areas of sustainability, energy, environment, biomass fuels, and related fields. The current and obsolete coal-based steam plant will be decommissioned once the new Renewable Energy Center is commissioned. It is anticipated that the existing steam plant structure will be repurposed and renovated, enabling it to continue to serve campus in other beneficial ways. Its specific use will be a component of the campus master plan update, which is now in progress. Even though the Renewable Energy Center is the primary objective of this energy performance partnership, there are 22 additional conservation measures which will be completed within the scope of the project. When combined, the utility savings derived from all of these operational and efficiency improvements will pay for the project within a 20-year time frame. This performance-based payback is guaranteed by Honeywell. We have prepared a brief presentation to update you on the progress of this great endeavor. I'd like to now introduce Mr. Dave Evers, who is the Senior Executive Engineering Manager with Honeywell, who will walk us through this update.
Thanks, Gary. Thank you, President Perry and Chairman O'Rourke. I appreciate the opportunity to tell you about all the exciting things that have been going on over the past several months with this project. Just again, as a quick background, obviously the steam plant gets all the attention. It's the centerpiece of a very large project, but there are a great deal of other energy conservation measures with some innovative ideas that are helping to fund that steam plant. You know, energy conservation has been a focus on this campus for many years, certainly long before Honeywell was ever invited to help with that effort. And really what you're seeing as part of this project is the fruits of all of those initiatives that go back many years that Mr. Reed started. The need for a steam plant has been prevalent on campus for many years. But the fact that you've done a great deal of energy conservation work already has gone a long way toward making a new steam plant affordable. But I would like to share with you some of the other exciting things that are going on with the other energy conservation measures that Mr. Reed referred to. Again, this total $80 million project, of which $55 million is the steam plant, but that obviously leaves a significant amount of project funds being spent on other innovative energy conservation measures. And in total, over the 20-year term of the project, we expect the savings to the university to be in the order of $144 million in guaranteed savings that will help fund the project. I think most of you are familiar with the steam plant, some of the key features, the two biomass gasifiers, two gas backup boilers, one of which will be relocated from the current steam plant over to the new plant. But also there'll be a steam turbine to provide a little more than a half a megawatt of cogeneration capacity and a 10 kW solar array. We're pursuing LEED certification for the new plant, which would be a first of its kind, so we're excited about that opportunity. Schedule-wise, we're excited with where we are to date. We really got the permit to start construction in November. Of course, just then all the rains hit, so we got off to a little bit of a slow start, but the winter's been favorable, and we're happy with where we are to date. We expect the new plant to be online about a year from now, sometime in early 2011. But then we're planning an extensive period of commissioning and startup to make sure that the new plant is operating the way we wanted it to before we decommission the old plant in 2012. Just some photos of the construction. You can see by now all the steel is erected, the metal deck is on the roof. Here you see some of the reinforcing steel being laid for the shallow steam tunnel that will extend back to campus. You can see masonry coming up on the southeast corner tower. In fact, today if you were to drive by, you'd see some of the arches starting to take shape on the east facade. Inside the building, we're beginning the underground utilities work and laying some of the foundations for the equipment. And then from the looking back from the northwest, you can start to see the tunnel that comes out of the building going north and then turning west. You can see that's looking west at the shallow steam tunnel taking you back toward campus. They're beginning to lay pipe in that tunnel. So a lot of earth's been moved, a lot of concrete's been poured, a lot of steel's been put up, and we're making a good deal of progress on the new steam plant. But again, some of the other measures that are helping to fund that. As part of that project, there's a new switchyard that allow you to take voltage electricity from Ameren at a higher voltage and thus pay a lower rate for it. We'll provide medium voltage power back to the new plant, as well as Carmen Hall, which was currently on a separate system, and also backfeed the two switch yards at Greek Court and 7th Street. Now, the switch yard we expect to be complete by around August. Here you can see they're starting some of the site work and the foundation work for the new switch yard in these next couple of photos. One of the smaller measures was just the replacement of some old energy inefficient transformers. You see the one on the right is the new one. This work was done very quickly early in the project over Christmas break. Lighting represents about 20% of the energy use on campus. Lighting technology continues to evolve. There's been numerous lighting projects over the years. Again, today with fluorescent lighting technology, we're able to get equal light output with lower watts, so we've been relamping most of the fixtures on campus, but also installing a tremendous amount of occupancy sensors to help control light when they're on and off. Most of this work should be complete by July and results in tremendous energy savings. This, I think, is over in the business office with one room that's already been completed. Another measure was some plumbing work. We did a great deal of plumbing work under the previous ESCO project. Since the legislation changed to allow 20-year payback projects under performance contracting, this was one that wouldn't have been viable under previous legislation, but under a 20-year payback, this change to the flush mechanisms for some of the urinals became viable. Five of the residence halls are going to get new windows, three of them this summer and two of them next summer. We've got a couple of pictures. We've installed just some samples over in Lawson. You can see this is the existing windows, and then the new windows will look quite similar, but be much more energy efficient and control drafts a lot better. As the campus was constructed over time, each building had its own chiller originally, and several years ago an effort was started to connect the buildings to provide improved redundancy. In several stages now, we've been extending and modifying that loop for further efficiency. This is kind of the last major step in the evolution of that chilled water loop. to change it from what we call a single pipe to a two-pipe loop to allow better redundancy and more efficiency. This photo is some of the interconnecting piping between the north loop and the south loop. We're also changing the way chilled water is controlled through the air handling units through a new type of valve that allows for more precise and more efficient control of the flow of chilled water. Here's a couple of photos of some of those new valves that have been installed at quite a few air handling units around campus. Over at Lance, the mechanical system there is undergoing some control changes to provide improved humidity control and better efficiency. Also, as part of that change, we replaced the windows along the south side of Lance so that we didn't run into condensation problems in controlling the humidity. So you see new windows and doors along that face of the building. A major effort under this project is in the concept of retro-commissioning. The ASHRAE Society is recommending commissioning of systems not only upon installation, but periodically throughout the life of those systems. What we're doing under this project is retro-commissioning many of the ECMs that were implemented under previous projects and other chilled water and air handling systems on campus by taking them through functional performance tests and making sure that they're calibrated and functioning the way they're supposed to deliver not only proper comfort and ventilation, but optimal efficiency. We've brought in a team of specialists who specialize in looking at the building envelope, finding areas of air leakage through the building around windows and doors and construction joints between walls and roofs and things like that. So this is another significant energy piece of the project. We just have some photos, some of the weather stripping that's been done around doors and overhead doors and insulation materials between roofs and walls, just sealing up those normal construction cracks. Fairly small one over at Lumpkin. That building had a separate heating and cooling system where the cooling tower was in need of replacement. In lieu of replacing that cooling tower independently, we've decided to install this plate and frame heat exchanger to connect it to the campus chilled water loop. Very small one. The facilities planning buildings were installed back in the time when it was popular to put in electric heat. Obviously, that's not most cost-effective today, so we'll be converting those to gas heat. And then we're also going through the steam tunnels to find areas where pipe insulation has deteriorated over time. You can see some of these photos of some of the conditions inside of the tunnel that we're trying to refurbish a little bit and just seal up the insulation. In the Fine Arts building, we're actually doing a fair amount of work. I realize it's only a two-year-old building, but it's really about a 10-year-old design. And so the fact that we're doing a lot of work in this building is merely a reflection of the fact that technology has changed quite a bit since that building was designed. So we're doing a lot of lighting retrofits and control changes and plumbing work in that building. So it may seem surprising that that's being done in a fairly new building, but that's really the reason for it. And then lastly, similar to what we're doing at Lumpkin, some of the refrigeration systems for the kitchens are being converted over to a connection to the campus chilled water system. So once school's out for the summer, we'll take a few weeks to make some of these minor changes. So with that, I'd like to ask Gary to come up, and if there are any questions about the project or the progress, we'd be happy to address them.
I might just add the timeline. By the end of this summer, before fall semester, we'll be completed with everything but the Renewable Energy Center, the window installs for some of the residence halls, and some of the retro-commissioning functions. So the project's going along very nicely on schedule. Thank you.
Any comments or questions from anyone?
I have to say that this is the best vote I've ever taken on this Board of Trustees. This is an amazing project, and I'd like to thank Gary for all of his hard work on it and Dave as well. They've been an amazing team, and I look forward to coming back to campus in a few years and seeing that new, nice new and renewable energy plant online and the decommissioning of that antique, noisy old steam plant. Back when I was a freshman, Gary and I guess, who was it, Vice President for Business Affairs at the time, Cooley, had given a presentation to Student Action Team about how that plant was, how bad that plant was. And I didn't quite believe him at the time, but I've seen how bad it is, and it was definitely time to replace it, and I think that they've been doing a great job. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your fine report, gentlemen.
Thanks for your support.
Good. Completes my report, sir.
At this point, I just have a few comments, and I just want to take this time to thank everyone, my fellow board members, the administration, the faculty, the staff, and students for your support and hard work this past year. We've had some great successes and accomplishments. We've also had some very difficult and, if not daunting, challenges, and we still have those, of course. And the challenges that remain in front of us for this university and this campus requires all to be very innovative and open to new approaches, engage in some critical thinking, and at the same time stay focused on our mission, which Bob Webb talked about our mission this morning. I think it's a great mission, and we'll stay focused on that as we make all these changes that are needed. Despite all the demands and problems that faces, I believe EIU is well positioned to maintain, if not improve, its standing in the ranks of public universities. This truly is a great university, and the reason it is the people. The essence of this university has always been its people. The people of EIU make it great, and that's all the people in this room and your associates that span out across this nice campus. And it's my firm belief that this campus will continue to excel because of its people. So I want to thank everyone for your hard work. We have a lot of hard work ahead of us, but I wanted to appreciate you all today for this past year that I've been chairman, and it's been a great pleasure. And next, we'll move on to keep hearing from me, board report, or committee reports. And the executive committee is first. Don, are you still with us? Oh, Don's left. The entire board, except Mr. Yost, of course, was at the executive and planning committee. So I won't go into great detail, but I will list the items we talked about. We had a quite extensive agenda today. We heard about the budget from Dr. Weber. We had a quick report on the AGB board meeting in Orlando that we will go into detail later. We had a report from Mr. Welch on the National Conference for the National Center for the Studies of Collective Bargaining in Higher Education and Professions. We had a report on the meeting of the Illinois Board of Higher Education from Dr. Lord. We discussed the trustees' planning retreat with Dr. Perry leading that. We had an update on the campus master plan from Dr. Weber. We had an update on legislative matters from Dr. Markley. We had a discussion about federal relations from Mr. Martin. And finally, an update on NCAA recertification from Dr. Markley. So as you can tell, we had a quite extensive meeting. Next, we'll go to Board Relations Committee. Ms. Nimmons.
Thank you, Chair. We met very briefly. We had an action-packed meeting this morning, as you've heard, and so we kind of spilled over. But the main emphasis continues to be the campaign. Mr. Martin, Ms. Evans, their entire team are working very, very hard. So far, everything is on track. A lot going on, planning, kickoff event for next fall, and we're very happy with the progress thus far. Great team of individuals who care deeply about Eastern serving on the external steering committee. They're working very hard, and I know the deans and are getting involved greatly with the campaign, which we all appreciate, and it's going to be successful. We're thrilled to have the opportunity to participate in this.
Thank you. Next, we have the report from the Finance and Audit Committee. Mr. Webb.
All of you should have received a copy of the FY09 audit for that fiscal year. The board does have certain responsibilities with respect to the audit, and the audit committee has spent I guess two sessions with staff just reviewing the findings of that audit. The bottom line is that the following statement: financial statements for FY09 were fairly presented in all material aspects, and the auditors gave the other unqualified opinion, which means everything's okay. They do usually pick out a few things to call to the university's attention and ask them to pursue. One of them, the university is required to develop a disaster contingency plan for a disaster which would destroy all of the data based here in our computers. And the university is in the process of doing that. It has to be off campus. One possibility is to transfer all that data to another university and exchange data, so to speak. There is a cost, of course, associated with doing that, so we're moving. They are moving carefully, and hopefully that will be taken care of. One of the things that can happen if your audit has some questions they want to discuss further, you can be called before the Legislative Audit Commission. And happily, we're not being called before the Legislative Audit Commission this year or the past year. So all in all, I believe that we're very comfortable with the audit report and the work that's being performed in the accounting business offices.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Webb. Next is Academic and Student Affairs Committee, Mr. Welch.
Thank you. This morning we were, I think, scheduled for a half an hour. It took us approximately an hour to get through the agenda. I think there was more things to be discussed than we had time available to do it. One of the items was the sort of an outreach effort at the Urban Prep Academies in Chicago. We got a report on the analysis of those students and their applicability to Eastern from Dr. Lord. We got a update on the textbook rental service, but from that standpoint, over lunch hour, the board had the opportunity to actually visit the new facility. And Eric Wilbur set a record for the shortest semester on record by checking in and getting his books for the semester and checking out with about a minute's time lapse. So congratulations for that rather brief learning experience. I've never seen anybody go through books that quickly. So, we're once again utilizing committee selection for EIU Read. Reads this the book selected for this year is This I Believe, Part 2. Personal Philosophies of Remarkable Men and Women. This is for incoming freshmen. I'm personally acquainted with this. My wife Kay and I were facilitators for the discussion last year, and we are scheduled to participate again. We had a brief discussion among ourselves. Would the incoming freshmen be intimidated by a no-nonsense English teacher and an attorney, as well as a board member at Eastern? The answer was unequivocal, no, they were not impressed. They spoke their mind, which is what the intent was, and I certainly look forward to this year's. We went over the proposed tuition fees, which the board has acted on, so I don't need to go over that. Chairman Nimmons asked for a report on measurable goals for integrated learning initiatives, so we have about a five-page report on that, which we received, and I'm sure we will be going over that in detail at a later time. And then also an information report on student research accomplishments. With the brochure from the EIU Showcase Exploration, an inquiry of undergraduates held April 9th of this semester with a brief title of the presentation, the student presenter, and the faculty mentor. Very, I think, memorable and important accomplishment. And also a report on the participants at the National Conference on Undergraduate Research held in April of this year in Missoula, Montana. And it's my understanding that Eastern was as well as represented as any university in the country. I ask, and apparently the potential in the future is that these presentations could be incorporated into a proceedings, which would be, I think, a very useful document if that is indeed the case. And I think that pretty much took care of the amount of time we had available to go through that rather formidable agenda. Anything to add, Ms. Nemes? Okay.
Good job.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Sounds like you're quite busy. And also board regulations, Mr. Welch.
Well, that was the only apparent change in board regulations that we presented for the first reading, so that business has been taken care of at this time.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Next is a report from board members attending various conferences. The first, the Association of Governing Boards 2010 National Conference on Trusteeship. I attended, and Dr. Webb attended. I was very thankful and fortunate to attend it. It was, as usual, AGB does a tremendous job in these conferences. The main speakers, the presenters, the panels are first-rate people from around the nation and international people. I particularly attended workshops. I attended a workshop on management of trustee conflicts of interest, also a workshop on leadership strategies for board chairs of public universities. Of course, the keynote address, and the keynote this year was addressing the growing need for access to higher education. It was given by a gentleman named Freeman Hrabowski III, who's the president of University of Maryland in Baltimore County. That doesn't sound very impressive, but it is a quite large, full service university. He's a very impressive man. His delivery of his speech was as good as I've seen in one of these things. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of Freeman, but you may just look him up. He's quite an individual. Also attended sessions, one of my favorites, is called Can This Marriage Be Duplicated? And don't let the title fool you, that the subject was a conversation about successful board CEO relationships. And I'd love to share all those things with you, fellow board members, another time. It was very interesting. We've got a pretty good marriage, I'll say that right now, but time will tell. Also, I attend a conference, 10 Things Boards Need to Know Now About Higher Education Finance. Also, a session, the Board's Response for Academic Quality, which Bob and I both attended, and Dr. Stan Eikenberry from University of Illinois was on that. Again, all those they were wonderful conferences, wonderful workshops. In summary, the things I think I took away mostly from there were the access questions that America is falling a little bit behind in the world in number of graduates, especially in westernized countries, and that access for higher ed should be for those that are qualified. We need to emphasize that more, that we have too many people not being given that access, not given it, but shown how to get there, how to succeed. Another thing was the academic quality topics, that boards really have a strong responsibility for academic quality. And I think the most important thing I got out of every conference and every discussion I had, and I discussed, many people have been to conferences, you learn more in the hallway and at lunch than you do sometimes, is that we're doing okay. Of all the topics that were discussed and the major topics that were on people's minds, Eastern's doing things pretty well and doing them in the right way. So those are the three things that I bring back. I'd be glad to share any of the materials I've got that I obtained. Most of them are accessible through the AGB, but I'd be glad to show them and share them. And Dr. Webb, we'll let you talk about your experience.
I don't think I'll continue the marriage analogy. Two things. One, about board self-assessment. This is a trend throughout the country that boards ought to be assessing themselves as well as assessing other people. And as you know, we've just completed a self-assessment. I think the first one that's ever been performed by the Board of Trustees at Eastern. And I think we had a very good instrument. And we had the results. And now, Mr. New Chairman, I guess you'll have to figure out what to do with them. But I think it's a good exercise for the board. The other, of course, is assessment of presidential performance. It's recommended that the president be assessed by the board annually and by a larger group, including the community and the faculty and staff and others on a 3 to 5 year schedule. And we're on that schedule. We've just completed a 3 year evaluation. President Perry, speaking of marriage, and so I think our board is right on track, both with regard to self-assessment and to assessing the president's performance. Just to reinforce what Mr. O'Rourke has said about the board's responsibility on academic quality, that's being proposed by accrediting agencies and others. And to know how we do that, you look back on the first page of our book that says the EIU's mission statement. It says exactly there what the university claims to be doing, having to do with accessibility, superior education or teaching. Students learn the methods and results of free and rigorous inquiry, refine their abilities to reason, communicate clearly, and so forth. And the question is, are we doing that? And it's the board's responsibility to ask for and review the data, the reports that are indicators of how we're doing in those regards. We're getting some of that information now, and have been, and hopefully the Student Academic Committee will pursue that a little bit and see that perhaps we get additional information where appropriate in the future.
Okay, anybody have any questions of Dr. Weber, myself? Thank you. Next, Mr. Welch. He attended the 37th Annual National Conference for the National Center for the Study of Collective Bargaining in Higher Education and Professions. Mr. Welch.
Thank you. This particular conference was held in New York, at sponsored by Hunter College, actually held on the campus of RUC, one of the city universities of New York. The title of the conference was Renewal and Reinvestment in Higher Education. Now this is being attended by some of the both administrators and faculty representatives from many of the major northern states, Illinois included, also Florida, Michigan, California was represented, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and et cetera. And maybe the common theme was the race to the bottom because of the lack of funding for higher education from these various states. California is leading the pack to the race to the bottom, but Illinois is following close behind. And, with and that was really the theme of the conference, at least the conversations among participants. The conference is structured pretty much by panels that represent both college university administrators and faculty representing collective bargaining units. Opening address was given by Wilma Liebman. She's the chairman of the National Labor Relations Board, setting the framework for labor law and the legal framework with responses from panelists. Other presentations were advocacy for higher education. How can we make a compelling national case for higher education? As I mentioned previously, one of the most pointed remarks came from Scott Jasnick. He's the editor of Inside Higher Education, some online weekly report on various and sundry events taking place across the country. And it's his opinion as a journalist that we are not making a compelling case sufficiently to the public in support of higher education. And I think it's not strictly his opinion. There are some surveys that show that, there is a declining support. And I think in part, and this is my own opinion, when there is a news article released, and there will be one today, there will be, I expect, a statement that the tuition at Eastern Illinois University has gone up. But at the same time, there will not be a report on the decline in funding. So the correlation with tuition increase and declining funding, there's a relationship there. And he indicated that we need to make our position known more clearly to the public as to what is happening. And so that was essentially a charge to those in attendance, and I think it was certainly a message that was received. The other thing I want to comment on, also making a presentation, was Bill Shorman, who's the President Emeritus of the National Labor College, and Jeffrey Cross from Eastern, Vice President, Academic Affairs, the co-editor of the new online journal of collective bargaining in the Academy. So volume one, issue one, is online and available for your review. It's hosted by the Booth Library, so Eastern is very much involved, not only the planning of the conference, but certainly Jeff has taken some leadership, certainly on this, this I think, a new important journal. In regard to another workshop, I attended advocacy at the state level, getting a message to the General Assembly. Illinois, I think, probably is doing as well as others. We do have this Higher Education Legislative Coalition, which has been in existence for approximately 4 years now. And the participants on this coalition is increasing. The most recent addition to the coalition were the Council of Community College Presidents. And I've mentioned that possibly the university presidents might consider formulating a position to join the coalition. There are no dues. So the time you put in is... But no due structure. So I think we're doing quite well from that regard compared to what I heard at this meeting. But to say that the almost the entire focus at the conference was revolving around advocacy and the state budgets or lack of them. The conference attendance was up, which was to some degree unexpected because of restrictions on travel and what have you. But I think that reflects the dire straits that many college universities and states find themselves in. So they were, I think, viewed this as a conference they should be attending and participating in. So the other thing, for the first time, the Harvard School of Labor School has showed up to be a part of this particular conference, as in part financially supporting it. So that was a welcome addition.
Thank you, Mr. Welch. Any questions or comments? Thank you. Next, we'll go to reports from constituencies. First, we have the Faculty Senate, Dr. Pommier.
Thank you, Chairman O'Rourke, everyone. I just wanted to step up here shortly just to thank Mr. Yost as well as Mr. Weber for attending our session about 3 weeks ago, as well as extend my invitation to everybody and your reply. I think this is the first time that at least I remember from being on the Senate that we've actually had the Board of Trustees come and visit with the Senate, and we appreciate that opportunity. And one last thing, I would also like to recommend or recognize Mr. Wilbur for his unbelievable presence here on this given campus. I've seen many students involved, but nobody has ever reflected what you have done here. You are definitely a person of action and a power of a student voice. So I also want to state that as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions?
I would just like to thank him for those kind comments, and it was a pleasure to come before Faculty Summit. I think we had a good discussion.
Yes.
Yeah, I would love to attend sometime. I couldn't attend the meeting last meeting, but thank you for inviting us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Anything else? Thank you. Next, Mr. Wilbur has asked permission to introduce his successor, which I think would be very appropriate. So, Eric?
Yes. As you all know, I am graduating in 2 weeks. And so 2 weeks ago, we had our student government elections, and I would like to introduce Mr. Aaron Wiesing as the new Executive Vice President and Student Trustee for Student Government. He is currently a sophomore from Sigel, Illinois, and he'll be joining the board for the next year, starting on July 1st. So, and then... Congratulations.
Thank you. And next we'll hear from student government. Ms. Murphy.
Hello, hello. Again, Aaron Wiesing. He's going to be taking over from Mr. Wilbur. I'm super excited. It was very convenient that this happened this morning, but I was doing some work on my laptop in bed. I'm not going to make a story up, but and Aaron called and said, hey, you're going to the board trustees meeting? I said, welcome to work. I didn't know there was one, so very good for Aaron. Good work so far. For the rest of the executive board that was elected last week, or a couple weeks ago, Jennifer Perlman will be our VP for Academic Affairs, Dan Rolando is the VP for Student Affairs, and Ashley Hoogstraten is our VP for Business Affairs. Really excited about those new members to the executive board, so be very excited to start that. We had a vacancy in our exec board with our Vice President for Student Affairs. So to remedy that, we have sworn in our newly elected Dan Rolando to fill that position. So he is actually already on the exec board. So that's how we constitutionally remedied that situation. As Rachel was up here, we participated in Panther Service Day. A lot of student government was involved in that. It was super fun. I cleaned out the moldy basement of the YMCA. Which was in Mattoon, which is really fun. The Senate really did a nice job stepping up in the absence of our Vice President for Student Affairs, who kind of heads that project up for the student government side. So I was really proud of that kind of activity, which doesn't go unnoticed, absolutely. Panther Nation has our last meeting tonight to wrap up the year. I'd like to take a really quick second to thank the Alumni Association, who has been our huge, huge help this year. They've donated a lot of prizes and stuff to help me make this work, and I really appreciate all that. So that's tonight at 8 o'clock. I'm super excited. This Wednesday is our last Senate meeting of the year. We have speaker elections. The State of the Senate address will be given by our current speaker. I'll give the State of the University, and then we swear in all of our many new student senators. So, and then finally, on May 2nd, we have our executive inauguration in the 1895 room at noon. So if any of you are around and want to come hang out with us, noon on Sunday. So unless you have any questions, thank you for your time, and I will be seeing you next year.
Any questions of Ms. Murphy? Thank you very much. Next on the agenda is our information items. And the first is a summary of purchases, $100,000 to $249,999, and there are none. Next is the FY 2010 deposit investment report. Dr. Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Our deposit and investment report is a little changed from the last time we provided this information to the board. However, Treasurer McCann and I are available to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions from the board? Thank you very much. Next is University Highlights. President Perry.
Well, I would just bring to your attention a couple of the items under the University Highlights. One is Stephanie Pescitelli and her work on composting. This helps in the composting, but this will help us by not put. You have to pay now when you put things in a landfill. This will save us money by composting materials that would ordinarily go into the landfill, and also then we can use it for mulching and things like that around campus.
And Stephanie, along with some of our staff from food service, are featured in one of our website. You know, when you go to the EIU website, there's three or four vignettes at the top, and Stephanie is in one of them. Also, I'd mentioned that Coach Brady Salee was named the Illinois Co-Coach of the Year by the Illinois Basketball Hall of Fame. You may recall the women's team won the conference championship this year. And then also mentioned that a couple of our former staff members, one former staff member, Dale Wolf, but Keith Cohanzo, current staff member and an EIU alum, received the Jefferson Award locally. But Keith is a longtime employee of EIU and has been a great public servant and a great community servant. And so if you happen to see Keith in your visits to campus and so forth, please extend a hand of thanks to him. Thank you.
Are there any other matters to come before the board?
I just wanted to say that while we're commending Eric, I attended a seminar over here last week, I believe it was, on funding for higher education, or lack thereof. And Eric was on the podium with university presidents and full professors, and I must say he did an outstanding job in making this presentation. Wasn't intimidated a bit. In fact, it was sort of intimidating.
Any other matters to come before the board?
Make motion adjourn.
Second.
Stand adjourned. Thank you.